Morning, everybody. I'm joined this morning with Barbara Richmond, Group Finance Director, and John Tutte, our Chairman, on his last day. I'll start by summarizing the highlights of today's results, and we'll then take questions. We are delighted to announce an excellent performance in 2021, with a strong recovery through the year, leaving Redrow well positioned for future growth. Completions were 39% ahead of 2020, and group revenue was up 45% at £1.94 billion. We achieved a pre-tax profit of £314 million, an increase of 124% on last year. These positive numbers highlighted the strength of our strategy and demonstrate that we have the right product in the right place for the right price. We continue to focus on delivering our Heritage Collection homes, which are perfectly aligned to changing customer demands post-COVID, as people look for more space in thriving communities. Despite very difficult circumstances, I'm delighted to report that we have maintained high level of customer satisfaction throughout the year, and I'm grateful for our teams for their ongoing hard work and commitment. While we have seen some build cost increases due to pressures on materials, this has been more than offset by house price inflation, and our trusted long-term supply relationships are ensuring a constant build output. As a result of this year's strong performance, the board is proposing a final dividend of 18.5 pence, making a total of 24.5 pence for the year, in line with the company's policy of 3x dividend cover. Alongside today's results, we have also launched a comprehensive new ESG strategy with industry-leading commitments. Looking forward, we have seen encouraging trading from the start of the new financial year and have a record order book, which provides us with an excellent platform for the future. With the return to a more normal market, we have also resumed medium-term guidance and announced guidance for 2024 this morning. Our high-quality heritage homes products have never been more relevant and in demand, and this, together with a supportive mortgage market, means that we are confident in delivering another strong set of results in the coming year. And with that, I'll now take questions.
If you would like to ask a question, please press star followed by one on your telephone keypad. So our first question comes from Will Jones of Redburn. Will, your line is now open.
Good morning. Three questions if I could, please. The first is just, I guess, around outlet numbers. If you could just help us with the how you see the shape of the outlet numbers evolving over the next couple of years, and really just exploring your degree of confidence in that. I appreciate with the London exit and high sales rates have been some fairly exceptional factors in the last while, but obviously it's been a challenging area overall for a few years. So how confident I suppose you are that those can get up beyond December to where you need them to be. The second was just around land, obviously a big year of intake at over 8,000 plots. Just exploring how you see that number, what you need to do on that number through FY22, and presumably given that you're maintaining the hurdle rates, that there's nothing untoward you're seeing in the land market around the ability to buy that at the right price. And the last is just around the balance sheet and net cash, which, again, net cash is due to rise further this year. I just wondered at what point you potentially see that as moving into a surplus capital position and how you'd address that at that point. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Will.
Should I do one, you do two?
Yeah, go for it.
So if I start off with one in terms of outlets, we're saying that we'll average around 112 outlets this year. I think we're pretty confident that that will be the case. We expect to close on this financial year on 120 outlets. And I think it's fair to say, you know, with what's got planning and what's in planning, we're pretty confident on that. In 2023, we expect to get up to an average of 126. Now, again, we're starting at 120. We are back-end loaded in terms of outlet opening, but we think by the end of 2023, we'll have, you know, over 130 outlets open. And then we need a further step up, obviously north of 140, to get to 137 average in 2024. Now, as you already will have read, that we added 36 sites into the current land bank in 2021. So you know, I think we're doing well so far in terms of the ability to deliver those numbers, and we've got name sites for quite a lot of these, but in terms of our ability to get the ones we haven't yet got, Matthew will come on to that now.
Yeah, I mean, we had a very successful year last year, 8,300 plots roughly bought with a £3 billion turnover, you know, so, and we also indicated in the statement that, you know, we've got them above average hurdle rates. So, you know, we were very pleased with that, and as I said, that underpins where we need to go for growth in our outlets. I think if you're looking forward to understanding where the land market is going, I think it's probably got a little bit harder than it has in the previous year, and I think we're probably seeing a return back to normal hurdle rates. But however, you know, we are confident that we can continue to grow the land bank going forward, and we're hoping to do that. So,
yeah, in terms of cash, the situation is that we, first and foremost, we absolutely want to invest in land, particularly with the new Southern Division opening. So our thoughts around cash are that we expect our cash balance to go up this year, but I'd still like to end the year as we did this year with a number of sites contracted that aren't completed. So I think we're managing the cash balance, and I think that in 2022, you know, we're expecting to end the year with a cash balance of about 220, which means our cash conversion is going to be about 55%. Now, when you look at what that cash conversion means, it means basically that our WIP stays roughly the same, and therefore the increase in capital employed is revolving around the increase in land and related land creditor increases. So the key for us is to spend that money in 2022. If we're successful in doing that, clearly we'll want to do the same again in 2023. So again, I'm expecting a cash conversion rate of around a similar level in 2023, which would mean our cash position would still be below £300 million, even in June 2023. Now, where it changes is 2024, because I think even with the land purchases in line with, you know, the growth rate that we're looking at that point you do start to see, you know, net cash generation getting towards £100 million. So at that point, you can see that there's an ability there to start to think about a cash return. So I think if we're successful in what we want to do on land, we don't get into that sort of conversation until 2024.
Understood. That's very clear. Thank you. And just to say to John as well, all the very best for retirement.
Thank you very much, Will.
Thank you for your question. Our next question comes from Brijesh, CEO of HSBC. Brijesh, please go ahead.
Thank you. I will have two questions as well. So the first one is on 2024 target, the $2.2 billion of revenue on that implies this 10% increase from your guidance for this year of around $2 billion. So I assume that 10% majority of that will come somewhere around starting of 23 and end to 24. If you could elaborate a bit on that. And related to that, what are your assumptions regarding Help to Buy, which obviously is coming to an end in March 2023. So is that $2.2 billion includes any of continuation, any sort of continuation or any other scheme being replaced there. And the second question is on house price inflation. We talk about 5% inflation in the region and with the Q4 rate, if you could elaborate a bit, what was the Q4 inflation for this? So you just kind of think of FY22, how it could be and how much it could be.
Okay.
It wasn't a very clear line, but I think we got the question. I think if you want to take the 2024 targets, probably, and then I could pick up and help to buy an HBI.
Yeah, I mean, we're saying in 2022 we expect to do between $2 billion and $2.1 billion, so $2.05 billion being in the middle seems about right. That's the year of really the biggest growth, actually, in terms of the regional business, because, you know, the build out site turnover and the London turnover will drop significantly in 2022. So to replace that, you need significant growth in the regional businesses Now, we're happy we can deliver that because we've got such a huge closing order book. And if you look at the closing order book, the vast majority of that closing order book is London. Is the region. So, you know, in 2020, 32% of the private order book was London. In 2021, it's only 15%. You know, so the regional businesses have that in the order book and sales rate going forward to deliver that significant growth in 2022. Beyond 2022, then you're really looking at a steady state growth of 5 or 6% in revenue in order to deliver the 2024 number. And we think that given the outlets that we're forecasting to open and the land that we already own, that that is eminently achievable, Brijesh.
Okay, if I just pick up on Help to Buy then. We said in the report that, you know, in the second half, which is really when the caps really kicked in, we're talking about only 13% of our sales were Help to Buy. That has continued on, and actually we're now probably running in the new financial year below 10%, the majority of which of that is, or a large proportion of that is coming from our London division, from Colin Down, the remaining sites there. So, you know, ultimately, you know, we've always been a differentiator in terms of our business and our products. We're more of an onward, you know, mover rather than in the first time buyer market. Help to Buy has been a fantastic thing for the industry. But, you know, ultimately it's probably helped most of the other house builders a lot more than it's ever helped us. And therefore, you know, without it being there, we're pretty confident. And we said in the statement that, you know, it will have negligible impact when it finally gets removed. I think the last point was on HPI. I think in terms of we said that we had circa increases of about 5%, of which, you know, a large portion of that came in the second half of the final quarter. You know, we are at the moment continuing to see house price inflation, you know, and we are also seeing, you know, cost inflation, but we're happy that one is continuing to offset the other.
Understood. Very good. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you for your question. Our next question comes from Chris Millington of Numis. Chris, please proceed with your question.
Thank you. Morning, John, Matthew, Barbara. A few from me. Can you just give us a little bit of a feel as to where you stand on product availability? I am aware you alluded to that, to holding back the sales rate at the start of this year, and perhaps you could just tie in a build rate point around that. Second one's just really about the profile of the new southern region and kind of how long it's going to take to get up to full speed. And the final one's just a bit of a technical one, I suspect, for you, Barbara. I've noticed you've seen a £26 million increase in provisions. Can you just tell me what that relates to?
Okay, well, I'll pick up on product availability, and I'll pick up on build output rates. I also have 1 second on Southern from my point of view, but I think you're probably more interested in the figures on Southern, so I'll let Barbara hand that, and then obviously your provision question. I think it's fair to say, you know, our sales rate, you know, for the first 11 weeks has probably, you know, is returned back to normal, and I think it's fair to say, you know, if we had more availability, that would be higher. You know, but ultimately, you know, we have to match our build output rate to our sales output rate. You know, when we came back, when you know, following the COVID, and we got 0.84, you know, that is a very, very strong rate. You know, we have bigger homes, so, you know, our build output is related to more square footage than most of the other house builders. So where we are at the moment is, you know, ultimately, we don't really want to build that order book much bigger than it is. We really want to convert that into profit and into turnover. So, you know, from our point of view, we are trying to, in some ways, hold back the regions in terms of availability to make sure that they are not selling too far down the field. So, you know, there's an issue with regards to, you know, people coming on stream in terms of the only thing that you've got available at the moment is also a long way down the field. You're talking 9 months to buy it, which, you know, changes customers' perception. They want something a bit more quicker than that, and then clearly on top of that, we're also trying to hold it back ourselves by not allowing them to have availability too far ahead on properties that aren't, you know, at least started. So, you know, that's where we are. In terms of build-out rates, you know, we are happy that we returned back to a normal build-out rate. We were just looking at the figures today, and, you know, we're running about, you know, we're probably running about exactly where we are buying land at the moment. So, you know, we are confident that we are, you know, matching our output rate, matches what we buy land at. So, you know, which is where, you know, the last 12 months, that's what we've been striving for to get to. and that's what we continue to target. I'll hand over to Barbara. Sorry, Chris.
Sorry, I was going to ask Matthew, is the build rate currently running ahead of that sales rate you've done in the first 11 weeks?
Well, it probably is just, but you've got to remember that the sales output rate is private and the build output rate is private and social. So it is running ahead of it, but clearly you've got a mix of product in there. Private and social is build, and you know sales is only private. So, you know, it is running ahead on that sense, but it is just. It's not a long way.
Yeah. In terms of the profile on Southern, clearly initially it's all cost because we're recruiting people and we'll continue to do so in 2022. And then we've got the office opening in summer 22, i.e. the beginning of our 23 financial year. In terms of the actual revenue profile for that business, then it will start to contribute to revenue in 2023, but that's from sites it's taken over from other parts of the group. So in terms of its net exponential effect on group revenue, that really doesn't start till 2024, and that will come from the sites that we are buying now and bidding on now, which will obviously come through from that point in time. So it'll have turnover in 23, but it'll really have an impact on the group turnover starting in 24, and it should be a normal operating division by 2027, Chris. So, and it will reach capacity after that, but it'll be delivering like any other division that you'd expect in 27. And then in terms of the provisions, yes, very well spotted. You are not alone in that, but you are one of few, as ever. What's happened with the provisions is that we have, to make matters more transparent for people, we've taken our fire-stopping reserve, which was in creditors, in accruals in fact, and transferred it to provisions. So there's a £19 million transfer during the year from creditors to provisions, and then we added £7 million to that provision during the year. So the fire-stopping provision now stands at £26 million. So it's £6 million higher than it was at the half year.
Got you. Really clear. Thanks, Barbara.
Thank you for your question. We have a question from Dean Grant of Bank of America. Dean, your line is now open.
Great. Thank you very much. Good morning, team, and congratulations on the results, and to John on your retirement. Just two questions from me, and just coming back to the sales rates and your comments about availability of units for sale for the first 6 months. Does this imply a reduced volume outlook for H1 and then picking up an H2, just to sort of understand the dynamic there and how should we be looking at volumes then on a full year basis? And then secondly, on your volume guidance or operating volume guidance, margin guidance of 19%, just looking to understand the moving parts here. I mean, it sounds like there's quite a bit of mix coming in and maybe just your assumptions here on HPI into 2022 and build costs as well. Just how are you looking at that? Thank you.
Okay. In terms of output, no, we won't get affected because the order book is so strong and so large. It's all about delivering that build output. You know, that's what we're delivering. So, you know, in terms of half one and half two, it's about converting that order book, and that's what we're driving towards. I think if Barbara wants to pick up the other issues.
In the case of 2022, I think it's fair to say that we would expect revenue growth to exceed volume growth. So we've given you the revenue target, so you can work back from that. And the reason for that is that because of the lower social in 2022, which I've already said in the presentation, if you've listened to it, drops from over 11% to just over 9%. And our social ASP reduces in 2022 as well because of the geographical spread of that social. What you're seeing is, therefore, lower volume growth. You're seeing the ASP blended up, and that's giving you the £2.05 billion of revenue growth. And included in that £2.05 billion is only £15 million of other turnover, which is, you know, we've already achieved that in the first 2 months of the year. So the rest of it is growth in homes turnover. So you can see that grows a little bit more, dropping because the other revenue is dropping from 37 to 15.
Operating margin.
operating margin.
Question on operating margin. What's driving
this? In the next 12 months. Oh, yeah, getting to the 2022. Well, it's nearly all house price inflation in excess of build cost inflation. I mean, what you've got to understand here is that when you look at our 2021 revenue, close to 60% of our private revenue in 2021 came from the opening order book. Not much of it, and then most of the balance came from reservations in the first half. So the amount of turnover in 2021 that came from reservations taken since house price inflation increased is very, very little. So since house price inflation moved up, that's all in the closing order book, and that'll all come through in 2022. So there's a little bit of volume impact. And there's a little bit of mix. Obviously, I've just talked about the social. Because of the lower social and the lower mix, about 40 basis points of the improvement is mix. And then there's a bit that's volume, but nearly all of it is net HPI.
Embedded in the order book.
Yeah, I mean, you know, obviously, you know, we've made assumptions on where we go with build cost inflation, but we're fairly comfortable with those assumptions.
That's very clear. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We'll now move to Dudley Shanley of Goodbody, who's registered a question.
Good morning, everyone, and thanks for taking the question. I just have one left. It's to do with build cost inflation. Obviously, you mentioned that material inflation has been tough to deal with through FY21, but I'm more thinking about what you're seeing in terms of labour inflation coming through for FY22.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say you split them into two, you know, your build cost inflation. And we said, you know, over the year we were circa 5%. I think it's fair to say the materials are probably, you know, coming to a peak now as you know, our output will start matching demand going forward, and we've already seen that with timber. I think it's fair to say that, you know, labour, you know, it's symptomatic of a very strong market. You know, you have supply and demand, and, you know, from our point of view, we're happy that we'll get to a position where house price inflation will offset, you know, our build cost inflation, you know, and we are still seeing that. So, you know, we don't have any concerns there.
That's great. Thanks.
Gavin Jago of Barclays registered a question. Gavin, please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. Morning, everyone. Another one on build supply, I'm afraid. I'm just thinking about the messaging from you today and I guess your other listed peers. It's been pretty consistent in that there are pressures in the supply chain, but they're being pretty well managed. Just thinking about the strong relationships that you've got with your supply partners, what insights have you got from them about who isn't getting the materials that they need? I mean, is it too simplistic to think about it being the larger house builders getting preferential treatment and the smaller builders and tradesmen are struggling? Or are there any regional patterns we can talk about? Just a bit more info would be useful, please.
I probably struggle to answer that one, Gavin, to be honest with you. I mean, we, you know, you probably have to ask the suppliers more than anything else. I mean, from our point of view, you know, we are seeing interruptions in supply, but having said that, you know, we do stock on site. We do keep a stock on site, so that's been evened out, and, you know, we are happy with our build output, which suggests that, you know, there is certainly no problem in terms of our onward build in terms of materials and labour. So I couldn't tell you how our suppliers prioritise what they do, but clearly, you know, some of our suppliers, we've had 30 years relationship with them, you know, even longer. I think you're probably even talking as much as 40 years with some of our suppliers. You know, so there's a very strong embedded position with our suppliers and our supply chain. You know, it's invaluable at these times, you know, having that conversation. But, you know, in the same times, we're very supportive of them when it's not so good times. So, you know, and they understand that. So I'd say that we've got very strong relationships. Like I couldn't tell you what they're doing in terms of prioritising who, but we're clearly happy with the supply that we're getting, and we continue to get it.
That's useful. Thanks, Matthew.
Thank you. We'll now move to Clyde Lewis of Peel Hunt.
Good morning, all. I think I've got four, if I may. Apologies.
Come on, Clyde.
Well, I've given everybody else a chance to ask the good ones, but, you know.
There can't be many there, things.
No, I was putting his presentation together.
Well, I'm
missed four areas. Jeez, go on then, Clyde.
So regionally, obviously London's been tough. Any noticeable patterns apart from London where you've noticed, you know, particularly strong or sort of slightly softer sort of markets? That was the first one. Second, in terms of land buying, I suppose, how is your focus shifting? I mean, obviously there's certainly a drive by the local councils to release bigger parcels of land. Is that where you're still shifting in terms of the overall sites that you're acquiring? The third one was on customer preferences. How has that evolved? Are you seeing customers travelling from further afield to come to your sites? Are they looking for bigger units on average? Are they looking to do more in terms of sort of My Redrow, in terms of the extras that they can add? Just sort of trying to sort of understand that side of it. And then the last one, I've got to ask around planning again. Sort of what's happening in terms of I suppose sort of the various different local authorities, are they starting to staff up a little bit more and to try and clear the backlog that clearly crept in over sort of 2020 with COVID?
Yeah, okay. I've got to remember all those, Clyde. That's the first question. You didn't tell me there were subcategories. Let's go. Right, we'll start with London. London and, you know, patterns across the country. I mean, we are happy with Colindale's performance. You know, we're going to be there for a very long time. It's clearly performing as we expected it to do. You know, we aren't seeing the same house price inflation that we are seeing across the rest of the country. I think if you talk about the rest of the country, we are seeing, you know, we're not seeing any pattern of any area being different from anywhere else, really, with the north is as much as, you know, performing as much as the south, which, interestingly, when if you talk about Help to Buy, the North really doesn't have Help to Buy and the South does. And so you are still seeing that the North being very strong even without Help to Buy. So no, there's no real pattern outside of London. Everything seems to be very, very similar. I think if you look at our land buying, I think if you divide the number of sites we bought by the number of plots, it averages about 200. There's clearly a couple of larger developments in there. Certainly we've got Colindale across from that point of view. But, you know, there is bigger parcels available. I think if truth be known, it's easier in the south than it is in the north to buy. I think we've got a desire to buy more in the north to maintain our production outlets, whereas, you know, we've got probably a lot more opportunities in the south, which is partly why we were opening our new office down in Croydon. You know, we see opportunities down there, you know, and, you know, our product suits very, very well in the south, you know, so it's a strong product, it's a strong market for us, and we'll continue to, you know, look at, you know, maintaining our position where we are in the north and central, but, you know, our growth will continue to be in the south. I think in customer preferences, I'll let Barbara talk about My Redrow, but, you know, in customer preferences, you're exactly right, Clyde. You know, the world has changed. You know, people are wanting different things. You know, they are going from the 5-day commute to the 2-day commute, which means that they can go further away because they're not doing that daily commute. They are also saving money on the commute. You know, and they're working a lot more from home, which means that they need bigger houses. You know, they want that extra office. I mean, we've moved into home offices, home pods, you know, so we're trying to adapt to a market that has completely changed. We think that strategy is going to be around for a long time, that people are going to be really reassessing what's important to them. I think I'll go into planning then, but Barbara can come back to My Redrow. But, you know, planning land authorities, I think we probably see that they dipped below 300,000 planning permissions this year, which is probably not unexpected. I think we'll probably see a little bit less next year as, you know, the COVID effect that came forward. So clearly, you know, from our point of view, it's the government's U-turn on what they were going to do with the white paper is very disappointing, but probably not unexpected as usual. I think it's very difficult for us to say that, you know, the government sit there and talk about a broken planning system, but actually the answer to it, they've now scrapped the answer to it, so they need to do something else. Ultimately, we still desire, you know, from our point of view, we want local authorities and the government to give us clear guidance in terms of what's coming downstream, when it's coming. You know, we've got a business here that, you know, we've got a business and an industry that needs to, you know, could do more and could deliver more if we had, you know, clear guidance. But, you know, ultimately we don't have 20,000 bricklayers sat on the shelf. You know, so we've got to plan for our business for a very long period, long term, and therefore planning is so important from that point of view. In terms of the immediate side, in terms of delivery, it's reasonable, but it's always unpredictable, which is a very difficult position for us to be in as a business. I couldn't tell you which planning is going to take 6 months and which is going to take 3 months, and you know, and that's still the nature of the system, which just proves it's not right. So I think that answers everything. Do you want to pick up on My Redrow, Barbara?
Yeah, of course I can. I mean, you know, our My Redrow position was that pre-pandemic we got to just over 20 million-ish of extras on our legal completions. That dropped back in 2021 because of, you know, the pandemic and the apartments as well that were in the turnover for 2021. So we were down at around about 18 million of extras for on legal completions in 2021. But if you look at the extras reserved, i.e. paid for, but on reservations as opposed to legal completions, that figure's in excess of 25 million. And if I look at the 2022 number that we're expecting, then it will be an absolute record of north of 30 million. And when you think about the fact that in 2022 we're selling some larger plots than 2021, where you've got more as standard, I think that just reflects how much people are very keen to personalise their home, how much they're thinking about being there for a longer period of time and wanting something that's just right for them.
Perfect, thank you. Can I just have one more, I suppose, sort of just can't let John disappear. It's obviously very sad not to be doing this personally, but you know, I just wanted to add to Will's comment earlier about thanking him and wishing him all the best, because I've known John, God, since I think it was the late 90s when you were, you know, became the CEO of Wilson Connolly when that was still listed. And then you sort of moved to Redrow in 2002 to head up that Eastern business. And, you know, you had a very, very interesting time through the noughties, to say the least. You know, and when Steve came back, the fact that, you know, he made you Group MD, I think, was, I think, probably, you know, one of the biggest accolades you could get from a man who is demanding, to say the least, you know, and also very successful. And he spotted somebody who, you know, saw your vision, saw his vision being, you know, coming through your thoughts and your plans and ideas, and obviously the fact that he let you take over from him as chairman, again another sort of a massive sort of recognition of how you do things. And I think, you know, you've obviously seen, you know, share price bounce around all over the place. The profits though have grown pretty steadily as a business, and, you know, standing back to be non-exec, but also delaying the retirement through COVID year, I think again just highlights the sort of person you are. And, you know, I've enjoyed our engagement over the, you know, 20 plus years that we've been talking, and I really do wish you all the best for the future.
Clive, well, thank you for making me feel so old. Yeah, and thank you very much for the kind words. Yeah, it's I think all careers over a spell, which mine has lasted well over 40 years and nearly 20 years with Redrow, it will always have its ups and downs. I mean, but I come out of it at the end. You know, it's been fantastic, and I think what I'm really pleased about is, you know, the business has got through the pandemic very well. It's in good shape, and I have the comfort of knowing that it's in safe hands with Matthew and Barbara. So thanks for your words.
All the best.
Thanks.
Cheers.
Thank you. We'll now move on to Gregor Kuglitsch from UBS. Gregor, please go ahead.
Hi, good morning. Few questions, if I may. They may be a little bit detailed, but I'll ask them anyway. So could you just remind us your hurdle rates? You sort of mentioned you're a bit above, and now perhaps it's paring back a little bit in terms of the sort of, I guess, gross margin hurdle rate that you tend to go for, and how you've baked in, I suppose, the increased expected costs around Part L, et cetera, as we sort of think about a couple of years out. So that would be the first question. The second question is, I think in your pre-recorded call, which I listened to this morning, you're kind of guiding for a WIP turn, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, of, I think, 40 to 50% of sales. I think that's what you're saying. I kind of know there's a little bit definitional changes year over year. So if you just elaborate a little bit what's going on there, And maybe relating to that, and maybe this is a question around the return profile, I think you're talking about 22% return by FY24, but overall your target is 25. So I guess the question is, what's kind of missing? I guess it's the asset turn somewhere. So if you could elaborate how we close that gap to reach your overall target of 25%. And then maybe thanks for the sort of detail on the sort of mix impact this year. I guess what I was interested in is the sort of, I appreciate it's a moving number with HPI, but the ASP in the order, sorry, in the land bank, and as things kind of settle down, you're exiting London, the social mix is probably going to normalize. If you just give us a sense how we should think about the ASP profile as we kind of go a few years out, appreciating that obviously HPI will can change that. And then maybe final small question is the new division, what's the associated OPEX with that I'm guessing you have to incur at some stage? Thank you.
Thank you, Gregor. It's the longest two questions of all time. I think that will, by time, put some subcategories into that. But I'll hand over to I'll deal with part L. I think the rest of it, unfortunately, goes to Barbara. I think if you look at part L, you know, we've got this stepping stone in 2023 and 2024, 25. So until we go to full, we still don't know the exact details of it. We have been working hard as to what the solution is. We've put a cost allocation in which we think will give us the interim place in 2023, and we've got a position where we think, again, we've been putting interim figures in for 2025, and we're confident that, you know, what we can achieve in 2023, we feel that we know we might be able to bring air source heat pumps a bit earlier in 2023, but there's a cost associated with that, and we're happy that the figures that we've put in going forward for both those years are well within what we expect. So, you know, it's going to be an interesting time. As we said, we're still waiting, you know, details from government. We have covered it off going forward in our build costs, and we're confident as we, you know, as we learn more and more about it as to what we're expected to deliver, we're more confident that we can get within the figures that we expected.
Right. In terms of hurdle rate, then obviously, given that we're targeting in 24, to get to 19.5% operating, then clearly you're looking at you know, around about 24.5% to 25% gross. So, you know, that's a normal hurdle rate, and I would imagine it's a very similar hurdle rate to other people, to be honest, in the industry. Matthew's covered the cost of Part L. In terms of WIP turn, yeah, I mean, we are targeting to get the WIP turn down. It was high, obviously very high in June. It was relatively high in June 21, because we had a lot of completions, because our year end was the 27th of June, and of course the stamp duty thing came to an end in the 30th of June. We did have quite a few legal completions dropping into those last few days, which obviously was sat in WIP at year end. But our target is to bring that WIP down, or for the WIP to be flat in the current year, with the growth in turnover, and that's a bringing turnover down per outlet, but also the big thing is, you know, reducing the WIP tied up in London as we complete the build out schemes, because we've got two build out schemes, you know, in addition to Colindale, and as they disappear off the scene, that clearly will help our WIP turn. In terms of how we get the ROCE from 22 to 25, I think the reason it's 22 in 2024 is this build-up of the Southern Division on top of the ongoing growth of the business. And as I said, even with that, we still generate a decent amount of cash. Once Southern Division is operating at a normal level, so we've got steady-state growth and Southern Division operating at a normal level, then we should be getting to 25%. And, you know, looking at, you know, where we think things are going, that could be 25 or 26. So I don't think we're a long way. By 2024, we're not a long way off getting to 20 to 25%, because it flips quite quickly once Southern is in a steady state of business. In terms of mix, and what that means, as I said, the social dropped to about 9.5% of turnover from 11% in 2022. Now, once you get past 2022, it goes back to 11% of turnover, and it stays at 11% of turnover. So, you know, your ASP will flatten off going forward from that. And therefore, basically, you know, when you look at the ASP in the land bank, that's exactly what we're assuming. You know, we don't build any HPI in any of our numbers. So we're assuming that from 2023 onwards, we're seeing a flat blended ASP. And that's what's in the land bank, because the real ASP, nobody knows till it happens.
Yeah. Okay, that's really helpful. Thanks a lot for your time.
Before we move on to our final two questions, I would just like to remind you to ask a question. That is star followed by one, star followed by two if you change your mind, and the flag icon if you've joined us online. We will now move to Ami Geller of Citigroup. Amy, please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. Just two questions from me. The first one was really on PRS. I was wondering if you could give us some color as to how do you see the outlook for PRS projects going forward? And can you remind us what is the level of PRS within the current order book? And the second is if on incentives. I appreciate that you have a very strong forward sold position. And even though the sales rates are quite normal, you are the build is the more challenging part of the picture. But as you think about the next few years, can you remind us what is the normal level of incentives that your business operates with and what's budgeted within the sort of assumptions of the sort of land deals that you have taken forward? Thank you.
Okay, on PRS then, just to remember, to give you the feel, as we said in the presentation, PRS was 8% of private revenue in 2021, so that's 140 million. Going forward from that, there's only one PRS deal in existence, which is in the order book, and that's the £120 million deal we did for Colindale, which was announced at the time it was done. Two-thirds of that will legally complete in the current financial year, and one-third will be in the next financial year. So there's nothing else in the order book, and that's how it will phase out.
Okay, incentives. Ordinarily, we probably have, up to a couple of percent. We don't really do very much. I think, it's supply and demand at the moment, and we're trying to keep that a lot lower than that at the moment. So, ultimately, 2% is probably our long-term target to what we tend to work to, and we're probably working to below that at the moment, as you can well imagine, with what is a strong market.
And just one follow-up. In terms of the overheads in the business, as the Southern Division picks up scale, should we expect the overheads of the business to also move in line with the sort of growth in the divisional growth that you're seeing?
Yeah, there's a number of elements to this. So first of all, I didn't answer actually when Gregor asked, sorry Gregor, was, the cost of a new division is around 7 to 8 million in total, including its share of the insurance costs and things like that. So the issue with overheads is that the 2021 overheads that we've got are still below a normal level for that year, because we have the additional lockdowns. Everything's been on Zoom, and we have not incurred the travelling expenses that we expected to incur, etc., etc. And, certain payroll elements have not happened. And so I think you need to start looking at 2022 and 2023 from a higher number than 93. And so, when I've spoken to people, you can't just have 2.5% to the 93 number or 3% to the 93 number. So I think, we're going to see overheads in 2022 be, I think, north of 100 million.
Okay.
How much north is difficult to say, but let's say between 100 and 105, and that's a combination of getting a normal rate plus inflation plus Southern plus our investment that's going on at the moment, our ongoing investment which Matthew talks about in the presentation about digitisation, the continuing digitisation of the business. the customer experience suites that we're doing. You know, this investment is all to bring about improved productivity as we go forward. So, you know, it will, I think we will have a bit of a bump in the road in 22 on overheads. And then I think you'll have a bit of a step up in 23 as Southern is fully on board and we've got the office costs and everything else. And then I think from then on, you will just get inflationary increases.
That's very helpful. Thank you.
We will now move on to our final question from Rajesh Patki of JP Morgan. Rajesh, please go ahead.
Yes, thank you. Good morning. I hope you can hear me well. I've got two, please. First one, just on the 2024 targets. You expect about 10% or so growth in the top line versus 2022 level, with around 20% increase in the outlet. So just wanted to confirm if there is a mix effect on ASPs there that you're looking at, or will the growth in the outlet numbers have a more sort of sustained growth on the top line beyond 2024? And secondly, don't know if you want to say anything on this, but can you make any comment in relation to the takeover speculations in the media? Thank you.
I'll do the last one. No,
you can do both if you want.
No, we don't speculate on any takeover speculation in the media. Did you want to do 2024 targets?
Yeah, I mean, the situation, well, A is just the time scale from one to turn into the other, but the fundamental thing is we're assuming a lower sales rate going forward than we obviously have had in the last financial year. And we will need to rebuild the order book to a degree because, you know, our order book will come down significantly in 22 and 23. So there will be an element of rebuilding the order book, but it's fundamentally a lower sales rate, you know, back to a normal sales rate.
That's great. Thank you.
Thanks.
There are no further questions, so I'd like to hand back to the management team.
Okay, thanks everybody. As we said, you know, we've got a great set of results. The company's in a great position, you know, and we're looking forward to future trading in 2022. Finally, I'd like to, you know, thank John for his long service of nearly 20 years in the business and wish him well for the future, and also welcome on board Richard Akers, who will be joining us as our new chairman. With that, I'd like to thank you all for attending today's Q&A presentation. Thank you very much.